No, I didn't. No, that's why I didn't think the Eddie Van Halen thing would last that long. But I'm glad it did, because now Eddie got his due, and now we got a whole podcast for John. So it works out perfect. That's the beauty of the podcast. It goes wherever it wants, Reggie, right? And now it's going straight ahead. I like where those levels are, so keep them there. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you some podcast magic, okay? Let's go. I'm in a good mood today. It's going to be a good one. It's got to be. It's for John, right? Here we go. Star, smile, strong. All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Or on my Facebook page, there's a link to this podcast at the WGN Radio website. Hopefully soon, the technical glitches of the podcast being available on other podcast platforms, as usual, will be fixed. But, and maybe it is fixed now. I don't know. It's out of my hands. But if you want to hear this podcast, you can. It may not be as convenient for you as it was in the past, but it's still there at WGNRadio.com. So if you really want to listen, you can. Maybe not as conveniently, but you can. I'm only asking for an hour of inconvenience, folks. But, of course, your loyalty and devotion is always appreciated here, and you keep me going. So thank you for that. Also, if you can, let your friends know. Send them a link. Send them a message. Tell them, if they're podcast listeners, that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it there? And once again, if you can do that for me, I'll keep doing this for you. If you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, go to the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt. You can find all previous 229 episodes, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 230. You know, last week on episode 229, I had planned on combining two musical-related topics of people that sadly had passed away, one recently and one quite a few years ago. The recent one, Eddie Van Halen, who just passed away earlier this month at age 65. And I was talking about the impact that Van Halen's music had on my musical taste and helped expand my musical taste. And I was going to dovetail that into another person's music and another person's personality who has had a huge, huge influence and impact on my musical taste, certainly, but also on my life, and that being John Lennon, who sadly and tragically was assassinated now 40 years ago, this December. But we are now celebrating, and a few weeks ago on October 9th, we celebrated the 80th anniversary of his birthday. And so I was going to combine those two, but the Eddie Van Halen one got a little more in-depth and complicated than I thought. I'm glad it did, because I thought it was a fun and interesting podcast. So I've pushed the John Lennon segment into its own podcast. And believe me, I think John deserves his own podcast, really. As I said, celebrate the 80th year of his birth on October 9th, 1940. And sadly, in another month and a half or so, we will be commemorating the 40th anniversary of his death. And now he will have been dead as long as he was alive. It's hard to believe that 40 years have gone by, but they have. I really, my nickname is Elton Jim, right? And so you'd say, wow, you know, you talk about John Lennon in such big terms, but you're this major Elton John fan. Your nickname is Elton Jim, and you've been a fan of his since you were 9 years old, and you've been to 197 of his concerts. So why would John Lennon be such a big influence? We thought you were completely and obsessed with Elton John. Well, you know, I'm a complex person. And I'm a person of many obsessions and many influences. And if you've listened to me with any regularity, you know that there are several people that have influenced my life in many ways. Namely, first, my parents, obviously. But other people who have gone out into their lives and done things I have great admiration for. In all aspects, whether it's politics or literary or the arts in general, certainly from a music standpoint, yeah, Elton John and Bruce Springsteen and John Lennon, also Bob Dylan, Pete Townsend are really among my many favorites whose musical talent as well as other aspects of their lives have influenced me. And there's other people as well. I'm a big fan of Leonardo da Vinci. In fact, I'm right in the middle of reading a great biography by Leo about Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson. And it is very well written. It's very well researched. And it's but it's very conversational. If you really want to read a interesting, compelling biography about a life well worth documenting, that of Leonardo da Vinci, but also a book that it's thick, but it's not daunting. It's so well written that it keeps your interest and it speaks to you, and that's to me the best kind of writing. That almost sounds like the writer is just speaking to me, and that's what I try to do with this podcast. So hopefully, even though I'm speaking to many, hopefully millions, right? Hopefully it sounds as if I'm speaking just to you, just a dialogue between you and me. And so I do want to share my great admiration, and I do want to commemorate the 80th anniversary of John Lennon's birth by explaining a little bit about how I view John Lennon's music as well as John Lennon the man, and why he has been such a big influence on me. It's almost—it's kind of cliched, and it could be because you know he was killed at such a young age, and so everybody just says, "Oh, you know, I'm a big John Lennon fan." It's easy just to say that. And he was a Beatle, of course, and so but I really think that. If you really start to go through the many layers of John Lennon's life and his career, you find a very, very interesting person who is worth, at the very least, if you don't admire him, he's at least worth learning about. You cannot deny the impact, at least as part of the Beatles, that he has had not only on music, but on the culture of the world. The Beatles changed the culture in 1964. Not only here in the United States, certainly, but around the world. And he was a part of that, a major part of that. Don't forget, the Beatles were his band. John Lennon started the Beatles. John Lennon started the Quarrymen in Liverpool. Then it later became the Silver Beatles, and then the Beatles. It was John Lennon who invited Paul McCartney to join his band. And George Harrison was a friend of Paul's, and he joined the band. And later, Ringo replaced their original drummer, Pete Best. But it was John's band. And he was very proud of that fact. And as much as he tried to distance himself and almost renounce the Beatles, I think at his core, he was proud to be a Beatle. He was still obsessed with the Beatles. He tried to distance himself because he was trying to get away from the Beatlemania and live a life as someone not encumbered by whatever the Beatles were as an entity. But it was impossible to do then, and it's impossible to do now to separate him. He is a former Beatle, and always will be. All four of them will always first and foremost be former Beatles. But I think it's fitting in this year that we see that there's a milestone birthday or commemoration for John, because in 2020, I would have to say all we need, or gosh, do we need, is, yes, love, but wow, could we use John Lennon right now? You know, this has been quite a year that no one could have ever predicted. And as I say, go back to January 1st, or the first week of this year, and there was a lot of optimism for the beginning of a new decade, and, you know, starting a 2020 and new beginnings and everything that we bring to a new set of 10 years. And within, 2.5 months, everything changed, and it's remained that way. And it's going to remain that way for a while. And there's great uncertainty, and there's great question still. And it's in these days that we look for constants, and we look for normalcies. And for me, somebody that I've looked up to for many, many years of my life is John Lennon. You know, his music, his views, his life experience have all shaped how I live and how I look at the world. And believe me, I'm well aware that at the end of the day, John Lennon was simply a musician or a pop star. And even as a person, John Lennon was far from perfect. He was a seriously flawed person in many ways. And in some ways, he was a broken person emotionally and psychologically. Lost his mother at a young age. Father never really was a part of his life. Was always searching for a mother figure. Had some instability, was very rebellious. He had a terrible temper. He had an amazing wit. He was amazing creativity, clever, sometimes too smart for the room. But he was also, as I said, a very quick-tempered. He could be very cruel. Early in his life, he was very misogynistic. He had all the flaws. He was very human, and yet he did have a love and a caring and an energy and an enthusiasm and an activism, an optimism, and I think an undeniable spirit that still does live on. And I think that's why it's important to keep him alive, because he did have a spirit that cared about the world and cared about other people. And what I think is most important about him is that while he was completely flawed, as we all are, I think as he got older, he recognized his flaws. He was evolving. And he tried to right those wrongs and right the wrongs he had done to other people, like his first son Julian, who got lost in the craziness and the chaos of Beatlemania, and John was really not a present father for Julian, even though Julian, in the stories he tells and even the pictures you see from the eras of when he was growing up, Julian was born in 1963 at the beginning and grew up in the height of Beatlemania. And, you know, the pressures and the stresses and the demands and the fame and the fortune and the media spotlight that just descended on all four Beatles, and especially John, because he brought that media attention to himself. It didn't leave much for other people, and that's why his first marriage dissolved. And as I said, sadly, he certainly was not the father that I think he wanted to be or hoped to be to Julian. And that's why later, when he reunited with Yoko Ono and they had their son Sean, he wanted to right the wrong. He wanted to do better and do better with Sean than he did with Julian. And so with the immense fame and spotlight on himself, always since 1963, he went away. He basically went into seclusion and wanted to raise Sean. He wanted to be a present father, the kind of father he wasn't for Julian. And I don't know how much he was able to completely repair the ties with Julian, but he certainly saw the mistakes he made, and he wanted to not repeat those. And so I think as he got older, he did grow up, and he did evolve, and he did want to change himself and always change what he saw was wrong in the world. And he wasn't afraid to give his opinion. He wasn't afraid to be wrong. He wasn't afraid to make a fool out of himself. He wasn't afraid to be a hypocrite sometimes, or be a walking contradiction and change his mind when he maybe got new information or saw things in a different light. And that's what's all about. We all need to always be self-aware. And there's nothing wrong with changing your mind, you know, especially in today's world where we're so divisive and it's right and wrong. You can change your mind. It's okay to change your mind, as long as you explain why, and as long as you can understand why, that you have an open mind to things. And that's one thing that I learned from John Lennon, is that you always can change. And you can always work for change. And as I said, boy, can we really use John Lennon today? Because there is such a hunger and such a cry for change. And John's entire life was about change and changing things in the world, as I said, that he felt were filled with injustice or were wrong. And so, wow, if he had lived to be 80, if he still were around, it would be very interesting to see what he would be doing. And as much as we'd like to try to think what John Lennon would be into, the one great thing about John is that he was completely unpredictable. Well, whenever you thought he was going to go in one direction, he went into another. It always kept him interesting, and I'm sure it always kept his life interesting. Certainly, once again, it also may have made him look like a fool or like a walking contradiction, but he wasn't worried about that. He was very worried about what he felt at the moment was important. And as I said, for me, the reason why John Lennon was and has been and continues to be a major influence is... I came to the Beatles and to John Lennon very late. You know, I didn't have an older brother or sister to pass down the Abbey Road albums or the Sgt. Pepper's albums. I was an only child, so I had to find these things on my own. And when John Lennon was killed in 1980, I was 16 years old, which is certainly an impressionable time in anyone's life, where you are looking for influences and you're looking at yourself and you're trying to find out who you are and what kind of person you will be or what kind of image you will present to the world. It's a very impressionable time. And I remember when John Lennon was killed, at the time, I certainly was shaken by the news, because I was into, you know, music and pop culture and knew who John Lennon was. But I wouldn't say I was a huge John Lennon aficionado or even at that time a huge Beatles fan. I had come to learn more about the Beatles over the last several years, but when I was 16. But I was kind of late coming to the Beatles because, you know, when they broke up, I was like only 6 or 7. So I didn't really... I was born, but I wasn't aware of them. I heard of them even as a young kid. I remember hearing those names, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, not really knowing what they meant. but then as I got into music, I was more into music of the moment. And so those formative years, you know, John, as I said, from 1975 to 1980, he went away from the music world and the entertainment world completely. So there was no new music from John Lennon. And those were the times when I was just beginning to get into music. So, yes, I knew who John Lennon was. I knew who the Beatles were, but I wasn't an aficionado on either of them. But when he died, and when I saw the aftermath of his murder on December 8th, 1980, and I saw the enormous global, not just here in the United States, the global outpouring of grief and sadness and shock and ultimately celebration of John Lennon, it turned my head and I said, wow, this is not just a death of a rock star. There's something more here. Why is this so intense for so many people? And so it drew me then to do my own exploration into John Lennon. And I remember just 3 years before, think about this. Elvis Presley, at age 42, died in 1977. Just 3 years later, John Lennon, at age 40, is dead. You know, Elvis, in the 50s, a major iconic figure who changed the culture in the 50s forever, dies at age 42 in 1977. And just 3 years later, John Lennon, part of the Beatles, who then changed the culture forever in the 60s, is also gone. So two kind of jolting losses of major, culture-changing personalities died within 3 years, both in their early 40s, both long, long, long before their time. And we can only imagine, yes, pun intended, what their lives would have been and what our lives would have been if they had lived longer and long lives. But when I started to get really into John Lennon, and like I usually do, I usually get into things, you know, hook, line, and sinker. And so I dug in and read as much about him, the books at the time, and read about the Beatles, and bought all. Even in my collection at that time, I did not have all the Beatles albums. As much as I was having a growing album collection at age 16, I did not have all the Beatles albums. I had some, but not all of them. But John Lennon's death, sadly, it's a shame that John Lennon's death had to turn me on to this and make me do it. But at the same time, I'm glad it did, because I discovered the impact and the innovative nature of the Beatles and the importance of the Beatles culturally as well as musically. And then after I got into the Beatles music, then I really focused in on John's solo music. And when I was 20, there was actually some new music that came out. Don't forget, the Double Fantasy album came in 1980. But then 1984, Yoko released some of the last music that John had worked on in an album called Milk and Honey. And by then, I was a full-fledged John Lennon groupie. And I was about, 20 years old. And then, having gone through the Lennon music and the Lennon reading articles and reading books about him and even books that he wrote, by the age of 20, I was certainly well-versed on John Lennon. And while I recognized his flaws, I also recognized the positive attributes of his personality and what he did. And I tried to incorporate many of those in my own life as a 20-year-old, once again, still developing, still forming your own personality and your own views and your own goals and your own perspectives on the world. Many of the ways that John Lennon looked at the world, I begin to incorporate those into my own life. And so from a very young age, I would say in my developing years, John has been a guiding influence. And I think I'm very happy for that. And that's why, you know, 40 years now, almost 40 years since his death, I'm still angry and sad and frustrated because we have been deprived of so much of what John Lennon would have given to the world. We don't know what it was, as I said, but there's no question he would have been a major force over the last 40 years. And I say that with some confidence because the great irony and the great disappointment is when he was so senselessly murdered, it was just as he was reemerging back into the world, back into the limelight, back into the music world, and I would think most certainly back into the public forum, because John Lennon was too big of a personality to just sit on the sidelines. And while he did revert back into a domestic kind of life for 5 years, from 1975 to 1980, when he was raising his son Sean, in 1980 he did come back with a new album called Double Fantasy, which was well received, but it wasn't the blockbuster when it was first released that many had hoped or expected it to be, and really didn't become a number one album until, sadly, after his death. Many were expecting, when John Lennon returned, some kind of new, groundbreaking, rule-breaking, innovative kind of musical sound to start the new decade off and do what he had done in the 60s, was change music again. And instead, as I said, John was never predictable. Double Fantasy was anything but that. It was rather a mellow affair that was basically a telling of his domestic life. It was a catching up of what he's been doing for the last 5 years, talking about his relationship with his son, relationship with his wife Yoko, living with the decision to pull back from the limelight. So it was not the big revelation that many people were expecting. However, when we see some of the music he had been working on, you could see that he was beginning to look to the future, and there was a new energy and enthusiasm and excitement to get back into the game. He'd been washing the wheels for 5 years, and now he was ready to get back in the game. And that's what is so angering, that just as this amazing source of artistic creativity and power and charisma and just a life force was ready to reemerge and do who knows what, but we certainly would have been interested and captivated and influenced by it, and it was immediately taken away from us forever. And that's what's angering. When I look at the last 40 years, when I see where we are today, I wonder, would we be in the same place if John Lennon was still here? What would his voice, what would his actions, what would have his music, what would his activism, how would it have influenced the world the last 40 years? And would we be in such a state of divisiveness today if John Lennon were around? I understand you're saying, wow, Jim, you're really giving him a lot of credit or a lot of influence. No, I'm just saying that he would have been a voice, and he would have had credibility, and he would have had a bully pulpit and a forum. We would have been listening to what John Lennon would be saying. And, you know, just as we listened in the 60s, it would be interesting to see how we may have been listening in the 2000s. But, you know, sadly, we will really never know. Now, I've been very fortunate because, as I said, being such a John Lennon fan and being immersed in his music and as I said, being influenced by him personally, I've been very fortunate I never got a chance to meet John, but I have been fortunate enough to have met and spoken with many people that were as close to him as possible. And I have talked to them and asked them about him. Most notably, in my media career, I interviewed Yoko Ono 2 times, once in person and once on the phone. Both times in connection with her releasing some of John's art in art exhibits that people could buy. In fact, I own a couple of John's artworks. And so I got a chance to meet Yoko in person. And I have to say, while she, she's a very polarizing figure in many ways, artistically, in the Beatle history. But I have to say, having met her and having spoke to her on the phone for like an hour, I could see what drew John to her. She is definitely out there. There's no question. She's a pure artist. She's a pure avant-garde artist in every sense of the word, which I think is why he was drawn to her, because he viewed himself in the same way. But just as a person, I remember being with her and seeing her in person. And there is a charisma, there is a strength, and there is an intangible that makes you at least pay attention to her. When I spoke on the phone, there was a sincerity to her. And I have to say, I wrote articles about these exhibitions and these artworks that she had released, of John's artwork that she had, and they were published in newspapers and magazines. And I sent them, my finished articles, to her with a letter, never expecting to hear back, of course. And one day I received this envelope that said from Studio One in New York City, and I didn't know what it was from. And I opened it up, and it was a letter from Yoko Ono thanking me for the articles I wrote, and I still have it hanging. It was just an amazing thing. I never thought I would hear back from Yoko, but I did, and I did ask her about John. And so she certainly is a major source. I have been at a press conference with Paul McCartney, and I talked, and my questions I had with him referenced John, and he gave some insights. I've met Elton John on 3 or 4 occasions. Elton and John became very good friends in the early 70s, spent a lot of time together. And so in my meetings with Elton, I've talked about John Lennon. And my favorite part of his Million Dollar Piano show in Las Vegas was when he sang his song Empty Garden, Hey, Hey, Johnny, which is a tribute to John Lennon. And it was my favorite part of the show. And on this 125-foot screen in Caesar's Palace Coliseum, there were images of John while Elton sang this song. And he would always give such an impassioned performance of that song. And when you're hearing him sing this song and you're seeing these images of John throughout his career, and with Yoko just walking through Central Park, you know, visions of him early days, pictures of him with Elton, and then just with him and Yoko toward the end of his life, it was just a powerful, powerful visual and sonic experience. And, you know, the cool thing, too, is that it was never expected to be.
I'd like to thank Elton and the boys for having me on tonight. We tried to think of a number to finish off with so that I could get out of here and be safe. And we thought we'd do a number of an old strange fiancé of mine called Paul. This is one I never sang. It's an old Beatle number, and we just about know it. Here we go.
That was John Lennon's last appearance on stage anywhere, in a concert setting at least, and public appearance in 1974 at Madison Square Garden during an Elton John concert. And it came to be because Elton played on John's 1974 song, Whatever Gets You Through the Night. He sang and played on it. And while they were recording, Elton said, if this becomes a number one song, you're going to perform with me on stage. And sure enough, it became a number one song, and John held to his word. And that performance, which thankfully it was recorded, he did three songs with Elton. He did Whatever Gets You Through the Night, Lucy in the Sky, and as he introduced there, the Beatles song, I Saw Her Standing There. And that was the last time he was in a concert setting. Ironic that it was in New York, where John lived and loved, and sadly where he was killed. But it's so funny how the Elton connection in my life plays together with the John Lennon connection too. So it all does come, you know, full circle. But yeah, like I said, John's life and music was something that was very compelling to. And if you read about, and I actually think, you know, there's a new John Lennon collection. There's been, you know, since his death, there has been many collections and greatest hits compilations. And people say, oh, my gosh, you know, another one. And they actually blame Yoko for, you know, exploiting him. But I don't, because I believe that every 10 years or so, we do need to keep remembering John Lennon. There's a new generation there that keeps... That is becoming aware of the world around them, and they need to be aware of John Lennon because he can't make himself aware anymore. So I have no problems with that. And there's a new one out called the "Give Me Some Truth," the Ultimate Mixes, which Sean worked on, and they're great sounding the highest tech remasters that I've heard. John's voice is really up front in the mix, and the music is. Sounds so much better than it used to when it was recorded in the 70s. But I think it's important to keep that music alive. And I think that John Lennon's solo career especially, I mean, his Beatle music is ingrained in history forever. There's no question about that. But, you know, his solo work always is up for debate. And I think that now, several years after his death, and several years since it was recorded, it needs to be reassessed because John's music was not chart-topping. His solo music was not chart-topping. Yes, he wrote some amazing songs that are iconic, namely what is basically viewed as his theme, Imagine. But, you know, Imagine was not a number one song. You know, Whatever Gets You Through the Night was even a surprise number one song. John never thought it would get to be number one. You know, he had number one albums, but he was never a very popular chart topper, because I think that the critics and the fans for those 5 years from when the Beatles broke up in 1970 to when then John went into semi-retirement or retirement in 1975, I think his music was held up to a higher standard. You know, Paul McCartney's music was always more pop-oriented, always more, you know, written for the masses, was always more melodic. And so it's no surprise that Paul McCartney had a very, you know, a very successful solo career, because he was writing those kind of crowd-pleasing songs that he had always written, even with the Beatles. So no surprise that he topped the charts. And, you know, and was a popular solo artist. Ringo, early on in the first several years of the post-Beatles era, was the most successful solo Beatle. He had the most, you know, top 10 songs of any Beatle, because he was writing or singing, you know, once again, crowd-pleasing mainstream pop songs, as was, you know, his inclination. And even George, who was pent up and had all this music that he wasn't able to get on Beatles albums, you know, those first several years, George was very prolific, had a number one song with My Sweet Lord and several popular albums. But John, everybody was always looking more from John's music. And John's music, his solo music, was not aimed to be massly consumed or to be pop songs and played on pop or top 40 radio. In many ways, his solo career, those 5 years, his solo albums were really a reflection of the transitions and the turbulence of his life. Those 5 years were a very difficult time. The Beatles broke up. He was in a marriage with Yoko that was very unpopular with the fans. They blamed her for breaking up the Beatles. He was an avid anti-war activist that got him in trouble with many people that were patriotic and pro-Vietnam. He got in trouble with the United States government. He was on the FBI watch list and on Richard Nixon, who was the president at that time, his own enemy list. They were trying to deport him. The United States was trying to deport him. So he had some immigration problems. He was going through his own personal problems of the aftermaths of and the current his drug use, acid trips and heroin and all types of drugs. Those 5 years from 70 to 75 were very turbulent, and the music that he made reflected those. Well, he did certainly write some pop-oriented tunes, but even a song like Imagine is this anthem, is this idealistic song of a perfect world that asks you to imagine. It's not an easy song. It talks about imagining no possessions and no religion. There's some serious thought-provoking messages even in that song, which is considered, I guess, a pop song to some extent. But even there, it wasn't a sing-songy, Moon and June kind of silly love song. And most of his solo career reflected that. His first album, the Plastic Ono Band, is all very raw. John and Yoko were going through primal scream therapy, and they and John included parts of that into his music. And so the song Mother, for instance, which is one of his most excruciatingly painful, at the same time loving songs, at the end he's screaming his guts out. Well, that's part of what he was going through with this primal scream therapy that he was going through with the psychiatrist Janov. So a lot of his music was kind of reflective, and it always was, even toward the end of his Beatle career, but certainly his solo career. It was about what was happening to him, and it wasn't all good. And so while the critics and the fans were looking for the same kind of pop music that the other Beatles were making, or Beatles kind of music, John's music was very honest and, as I said earlier, raw and not pop-oriented. And so people were a little disappointed by it. But I think now, decades later, when you look at John's life as a whole and you realize what he was going through and you listen to that music, you see the connections. And once again, as he had always done, he was sharing of himself, as any true artist tries to do in all aspects. And John, obviously through music as well as art, was doing that. So I really think his solo career needs to be reassessed and looked at in a different light now, 40 years after his death, because we have to see what he was doing. I think the pop, the rock star and the ego-driven part of John Lennon certainly wanted number one songs. He wrote this Christmas song, War Is Over, because he wanted to write a song that could be played every holiday, right? To be this kind of universal song. But then once again, within it, that song is not some cheery holiday song. It talks about war. It makes you think, and so this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year older, a new one just begun. it was still thought-provoking. Yes, it had a holiday spirit to it, but it also made you think. And that's what John Lennon's solo music, I think, really makes you do. It makes you feel and makes you think. And the more you know about his life when he recorded that music, the more you understand it and the more you come to appreciate it and like it. So I hope that John Lennon's solo work is reassessed, because I think we need to look at it through a new prism. But as I said, the one thing that makes me so sad is that we don't know what John would have done. I should say, too, once again, I'm Elton Jim, right? Everybody would probably assume that my wedding was probably, filled with Elton John music and Elton John kind of influences. Well, I'll have to tell you, it was mainly influenced by John Lennon and his relationship with Yoko Ono. You could say whatever you will about their marriage, and it had their ups and downs like every marriage. They were separated for 18 months. It was a polarizing relationship. As I said before, Yoko was blamed for breaking up the Beatles. There was a lot of racism against her at the time. She was an Asian woman. She wasn't some beautiful starlet who many thought that's who a Beatles should be with. She was this avant-garde, kind of radical, way out there Asian artist. And it's like, who was older than John? Which makes sense, though, when we remember John always looking for a mother figure. He lost his mother at a young age, sadly also killed in a car accident. And, he had a weird upbringing. He was really raised by his aunt. His mom and dad, his father left. His mom, for a while, he thought was his, didn't even know it was his mom. She didn't even live with them. And then he did have a reconciliation with her later as a teenager. And then sadly, she was killed in a car accident. So just when he was reconnecting with her, he lost her. That's why when you listen to the song Mother, you really hear the pain in that song. When he says, you had me, but I never had you. Because she never really was a major part of his life. And just when perhaps she would have been, she was killed. Just as John was beginning to reemerge and become parts of our life again, he was taken from us. But as I said, our wedding was very influenced by John Lennon and by the relationship of John and Yoko. One of the songs that he wrote that was on that Milk and Honey album that was released in 1984 was a new song that he had been working on at the Double Fantasy time, was a song called Grow Old With Me, which was a takeoff on the Browning poem. And the lyrics to that song talks about two people in love and growing old and sharing experiences. And we use the lyrics to Grow Old With Me as our wedding vows. So our wedding vows were the lyrics to Grow Old With Me. On our wedding invitation, the photo on the front of it is a black and white photo that is meant to be a recreation of the Double Fantasy cover of John and Yoko in an embrace, kissing, a close-up. And so we had that picture taken of ourselves kissing in black and white, just like the John and Yoko cover of Double Fantasy, underneath it with the theme of the wedding, Grow Old With Me. And we walked into the reception after being introduced for the first time to the strains of an orchestral version of what I believe is one of John's best songs, All You Need Is Love. You know how it starts with this, with the horn fanfare? Bum, ba-da, da, 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 da. Well, that's what we walked into. And then to the strains of the song as we walked into the banquet hall. So yes, our wedding was very much influenced by John Lennon. And what is very exciting is that this year, my wife and I are celebrating our 30th anniversary. And so, thankfully, we are growing old with each other. That hope and that dream that was on our wedding invitation 30 years ago, that hope and dream that John had for with Yoko, which sadly was not able to be a reality because he was killed. But my wife and I have been able to embrace the grow old with me sentiment that John had in that song. And so it's very, you know, it's just touching to know that that was something that we embraced, and here we are 30 years later still living it. So yeah, John Lennon's influence has been very deep and very lasting with me. And as I said, the thing that's most frustrating is what would have been. You know, I really believe that John would have been a major force, for instance, on MTV. John was making, you know, with the Beatles and Hard Day's Night, they were making music videos in the 60s. And they made them for, you know, Strawberry Fields. And in fact, I should also mention that, you know, my wife and I, we have visited Liverpool 2 times. So we've been to John Lennon's house and we've been to Strawberry Fields. And so, as I said, when I get into somebody or some personality, I jump head into the pool. So I'm very invested. It was great to see where John grew up. It was great to see what was the influence of Strawberry Fields. It was great to walk the same streets that he walked in. Whenever I go to New York, I go to the New York park called Strawberry Fields. It's just across the street from the Dakota where he lived, and sadly where he was killed right outside that evening. And that's my first stop in New York. Whenever I go to New York, my first stop is to go to Strawberry Fields. There's a huge monument there in the ground, a mosaic that says Imagine. It's always crowded with people. There's benches there. It's very serene. There's obviously a lot of tourists there, but I just sit there for hours sometimes. I have my iPod with me, and I always have John Lennon music playing in my iPod, and I just sit on a bench and just spend a few hours there. And, you know, you see the Dakota right in its shadows. And, in fact, one time, my wife and I, when we were in New York, we were outside of the Dakota, and all of a sudden, we were across the street, not in front of it. Yoko walked out of the entrance, the same entrance from the courtyard, the same entrance right on the street where John had been killed. Imagine that, every day having to leave your house and having to walk past the exact spot where your husband was killed. But she did it. She's moved on. But it was just kind of surreal to see Yoko standing there in that spot, and she walked out and she began to walk down the street, and my wife and I were walking down the street, and so she was actually about a block ahead of us. And at one point we both got at a stoplight, and we went up and we were there, and we didn't want to bother her, but I just did say, "Excuse me, Yoko," and We just shared a brief thing, and she kind of smiled and nodded. And it was a surreal experience to have seen her come out of there. So I've had some, you know, interesting, you know, Yoko and related John Lennon, you know, experiences, some completely unexpected and some that I sought out, going to Liverpool, seeing where John was born and things like that. And that's why it makes me think, and it makes me wonder, and it still makes me so frustrated and angry and disappointed to think, where would we be right now? You know, in the 80s, because he was reemerging, I'm sure that John Lennon would have been, you know, talking about and perhaps being, you know, active about Reaganomics and the economy at the time in the early 80s, and about, you know, the nuclear buildup and the threat of nuclear war in the 80s, which was a real thing. And, you know, Reaganomics and things like that. I think he would have been, as I said before, a major force in MTV. Because John was a visual artist as well, and he had been making videos, and he had made a lot of quick songs and videos for them, but there was nowhere to show them back then in the 70s, really. But here you had MTV, and MTV was based in New York. I think that John may have even been a VJ on MTV, and if he wasn't, I think he would have been a major force in bringing that to the forefront even before it was. I think there's no question that John would have been a major contributor to MTV in some way, and it would have been a major force in 80s music. I really believe that. I think, you know, he either would have been a part of Live Aid, or because he was always going to and creating charity concerts, for all we know, there would have been a Live Aid before Live Aid, started by John, for who knows what kind of, cause. I think in the 80s, there would have been a Beatles reunion. May have been charity-based, but I bet you the Beatles would have gotten together. If not forever, at least for one night. I really think that would have happened. You know, in the 90s, I think John would have certainly jumped on and embraced the new technology and the internet. No question about that. I would have loved to have seen what John's attitude would have been on about Bill Clinton, and especially the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Where would John have fallen in on that? And what would have John done in the wake of the Rodney King beating or the O.J. Simpson verdict? Who knows? Once again, it's impossible to predict, but when we think about some of the events that happened, it's interesting to think about those incidences and then how would they have been viewed or influenced by someone like John Lennon. In the 2000s, with 9/11, John Lennon loved New York. He loved Central Park. He adopted New York as his home. I can only imagine the pain as well as the empathy and the drive to make sure that New York reemerged and healed. I can only imagine what John Lennon would have done in the wake of 9/11. In both helping people deal with the tragedy as well as help them heal and rise above it. I think that would have been an amazing time for John to have been alive, to help people understand it. His influence, I think, would have been Nobel Prize worth winning in the wake of 9/11, of what John probably would have been driven to do just out of pure necessity and pure being of who he was. And then in the later years of the 2000s, with the George Bush years, and the Iraq War, and the Depression, and the gun violence that we're seeing in the 2010s, for instance, in public places and in schools, and our continuing battles with race and climate change, John was into the ecology as well. Where would he be now on climate change? As we look at the 2020s, climate change, Donald Trump, and certainly the Black Lives Matters movement, and the COVID, where would John be right now? What would he be doing? What would he be saying? What would he be singing about? What would he be marching about? We can only guess. But John Lennon really was a unique human. As I said, very flawed, a walking contradiction, but at the end of the day, a true human spirit, a spirit that we need today more than ever. In 2020, all we do need is John. What John would have been in 2020, who he would have been, what we would have been, and who we would have been in 2020, we can only imagine. Happy birthday, John. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Jim Toronto or Elton Jim, and there's a link there every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And hopefully we'll get back to the other platforms that you can download wherever you are. But as of right now, every Monday, WGNRadio.com. Hope you enjoyed episode number 230. Your loyalty and devotion is always, always appreciated. Don't forget to tell your friends, send them a link, send them a message. Tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Imagine.